This is Attention Talk Radio, your ADHD information station, part of the Attention Talk Network. Its sister stations include Attention Talk Video, your ADHD talk show station, our subscription-based newsletter, Attention Talk News, your ADHD news source. Each media channel can be accessed at their respective URLs, attentiontalkradio.com, attentiontalkvideo.com, and attentiontalknews.com. Keep up with all the media channels on our Facebook page, found at facebook.com/attentiontalkradio.
Welcome to Attention Talk Radio, the show centered around paying attention to attention, with your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper.
Good evening, everybody. I'm your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper, and this is Attention Talk Radio. Tonight is September the 25th in the year 2013 at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We've got a great show for you tonight, The Anatomy of a Story and the Benefits to Those with ADHD. Kind of anxious to get into this. I think I might surprise some of you guys out there. We're going to talk about the anatomy of a story, and you might think, why does that relate to ADHD? But I think you're going to be very, very surprised. And if you're not careful, you might learn something tonight. With us in our virtual studio is Rick Green, who's been on our show several times, and I'm anxious to kind of get things going, but quick, a few announcements. A reminder, the CHAD conference is right around the corner. It's this November, the 7th through the 9th. It's in the Washington, D.C. area. Actually, I think it's actually just in Crystal City, which is right next to the Potomac. I know that I'm going to be there. I already booked my airfare, hotel, and I'm good to go. Again, it's November 7th and 9th. For more information on that, go to chadd.org. I want to remind everybody, this is Attention Talk Radio. You can go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/Attention Talk Radio and get the latest on our video releases, our radio show, and our subscription-based Attention Talk News. But enough of that. Let's get into things. Again, with us tonight, we got Rick Green, who may be better known as Bill from the Bumbling Outdoorsman on PBS long-running series The Red Green Show. But he's also the also renowned as the co-creator of two groundbreaking documentaries on ADHD in adults. The first, ADHD and Loving It, has earned critical acclaim, awards, and kudos from experts, doctors, and adults struggling with ADHD. And the sequel, ADD and Mastering It, which is now running on PBS and promises to transform how 7 to 9 million Americans deal with the subtle saboteur that is ADHD. This second film is quirky, funny, fascinating, and full of strategies that work for people with ADHD. Rick's story is equally as quirky and fascinating. Recently named by the University of Waterloo as one of the top 50 science graduates of all time. Imagine a comedian as a graduate of science. Blows me away. But anyway, Rick began his career as a teacher in Ontario Science Center, developing programs and plays for the general public and school groups. He left in 1979 to be a full-time comedian, and for 8 seasons he produced and hosted the comedy series History Bites on the History Television, for which he received, the Gemini Award. The show has been hailed as the cleverest comedian comedy of all time in Canada. Is that right, Rick?
Yeah, a couple of different newspapers basically said it was the sharpest, cleverest comedy ever produced up here. And we picked a day in history. We went channel surfing. So I'd introduce that we're going to look at the death of Julius Caesar, and we'd have Nightline with Ted Koppel talking about the death of Julius Caesar. And then we'd change channels, and there'd be Martha Stewart talking about how to host a Roman orgy, and then click, there would be the sports guys, you know, rating the sports. He's a tough gladiator. I like this kid. He's got a Thracian sword, the little sword. And then we changed channels, and there was an ad for Roman toilet paper. And we had to actually go find out what the Romans used for toilet paper, because I knew they didn't have paper back then. Turned out they used sponges.
Sponges?
Mm. Yes, sea sponges. Isn't that weird?
That's weird, but I'm sure it's going to show up on Facebook somewhere in our future.
Yeah, exactly.
I have to tell you, you're telling this story, but I'll never forget. Like, it was last year we were in San Francisco. The conference was over from Chad, and we were celebrating your birthday. You're sitting around a table, and you were telling us about this. And I got to tell you, I think at some point in time, we all started getting on YouTube searching for some of the clips of some of that stuff. It was absolutely hilarious.
Thanks.
Now, some of that stuff's not supposed to be out there. They're pirating that. Is that right?
Yeah, well, that's the modern world. And the show is not available to the public. It's not in a box set anywhere. It was a very small, a small little show. So it was a hit with the critics, and people who loved it, and the rest of the world never heard about it. So, but yeah,
so
if you look online, History Bites, it's called. And there was five. Well,
and how much fun did you have doing it?
Well, I created the show, then I was the head writer, then I was the host of the show, then I acted in some of the scenes. I was also the producer and the director, and my wife became the editor. So, and she was an editor long before that. She was the editor on every episode of Red Green, I think, except the very first one. So it was great. We had the cast were absolutely phenomenal. They were the most gifted mimics I think I've ever seen working together, and they were brilliant, just brilliant.
Mm. Well, this is a great segue because at the end of the day, in your former life, when it comes to that, you were all about telling stories. Is that right?
Yeah, I think, and this is the power of story, is that we actually want stories. Humans are designed to process stories, to make sense of things, and so we pay money for stories. Go to the fiction section, science fiction, Harry Potter, movies, films. We want to hear stories. And so we are always looking to make the meaning. What is the story here? Even in things that you might think of as factual, like news, they ask, okay, so what's the story? Our top story tonight.
Mm-hmm.
It's not information. It's a story. We want a story. We want characters. People wonder why there are certain news stories that are huge compared to others. You know, why is Miley Cyrus bumping Syria off the front page? Because Syria is horrible, but the story's hard to understand, and there's no particular hero or villain or obvious. With Miley Cyrus, you've got characters, you've got action, you've got scandal, you've got drama, you've got conflict. And so we are wired that way. If there was one person or one family in Syria and somebody was managing to follow them, news report every day, how are they doing, with a news person there reporting on it, we'd be watching because it'd be the story. Will the daughter hasn't come home? Has she been killed? I mean, we'd be wrapped up in the story. So we are really wired for story. And you only have to look at the shows like, you know, some of the hot shows now, Mad Men and Walking Dead and Dexter, which just ended, and so on. Story. That's what we want.
Yeah. And everybody out there, where we're going to go with this is we're going to talk about story, but when it comes to ADD, we're ultimately going to get back to the story that you're telling yourself and the power of that and
mm-hmm.
how important it is to for you to manage that story. But I got to tell you, Rick, I've heard you talk about this stuff a little bit, and I've got lots of little sound bites here, but one of the things that just floored me was you being a Canadian, you commented on one time is that it's all about the stories, and you said, you know, if you watch the Olympics, you know, in the old days, and I remember back in 72, I was a swimmer. I swam for the same guy who coached Mark Spitz, all that kind of stuff, and that was his big heyday. Actually, that was – no, I got the wrong Olympics. Montreal was 76. But bottom line is, I remember back in those days, is it was event after event after event. It was fact, race, numbers, first, blah, blah, blah. Every once in a while they would throw in somebody on the podium. But you reflected to me when you were describing that, is if you look at the Olympics now, particularly on U.S. TV, it's 25 minutes of story in a two-minute race, and then they're on the podium. So it's like the story has taken over the fact, and when you identified this to me, it's the motion, it's the power, and it's almost like we're not so much drawn to the facts, we're actually more drawn to the story. And am I putting that into the right context?
Yeah, I think absolutely, and it's not like there's anything necessarily wrong with that. I absolutely get it. If there's, you know, eight guys about to dive into a pool or eight women about to dive into a pool and race, you know, back and forth four times, and someone's going to win. On the other hand, if the guy in lane two is from Serbia and his father was killed a month ago, and he's still here, and he was smuggled out of, and it's like, who am I cheering for? Who am I in tears over if he wins? Who, you know, and why are the other seven swimmers going up and hugging him afterwards, even if he lost? We want the story. We are moved by the story, and the power of story is tricky, because when you're dealing with ADHD, and we'll start by just talking about the fact that when you're sharing about that you have ADHD, story is your best weapon, if you want to call it a weapon. It's a powerful tool in getting people engaged. A list of symptoms, the DSM, a checklist. Yeah. If you're giving people the story of what happened, of what it was like, what it felt like, the emotions. Well, everybody's felt those emotions. Lonely, sad, outsider, loser, frustrated, confused. We've all felt that at one point or another. And that's how people start to identify. And if you can tell a story where it's very clear how it was before I got my diagnosis, I was struggling, I hadn't had a steady job or whatever, my relationships were a mess, I couldn't listen to my own kids when they talked to me, boom, you list it. And now, here's the transformation. Here's what's possible, and here's what my life looks like now, the story. People are engaged. People who would dismiss ADHD or say, well, I don't believe in medication, or it's not a medical condition. It's like, yeah, maybe it isn't, but here's the story of what happened when I started dealing with it. You can't deny the story. And the interesting thing about story is that we don't really care if it's true or false. Our bodies react the same way. You go sit in a horror movie, you know it's actors, you know it's makeup, you know it's special effects, but you're having all those reactions. If you've ever seen a video camera showing the audience at a horror movie, they're going through all of the emotions. Now, they're not actually having a heart attack because someone's getting chainsawed, but they're reacting. It's the same, you could argue, with pornography. It's just pixels on a screen or dots on a magazine page, but your body reacts, and it bypasses your critical thinking. So that is the power of the story, and it can be used and it can be abused. And what happens so often is that lately story's been abused and used to stir up anger and hatred and so on. And I mean, every dictator in the world has used story of we are the oppressed and here's what they did to us and so on and so on. The flip side is, and you see this on TED Talks and so on, is when people tell their story, then you're engaged and it gives people permission to identify. So I think telling your story and I don't want to say rehearsing it, but making clear what your story is, knowing what you're going to say and knowing what matters, is really a powerful tool in transforming how the world views ADHD. Alan Brown at ADD Crusher has this idea that, or I don't know, campaign you could call it, the 85%, the fact that 85% of adults who would fall into the spectrum have no idea they have ADHD. That's who needs to be brought in and educated and recognize themselves. And the way to do that is story. We don't recognize ourselves on a checklist. But if I tell you, when I was going out to do History Bites, and it was $10,000 worth of actors, camera crew, lighting, location fees, catering, makeup, hair, props, all of this was, and I couldn't find my car keys, so I was going to be late, and I'm running around the house like a madman, cursing and screaming at myself, thinking, telling myself a very bad story, because at the time I didn't know about ADHD. Holy smokes. I came up with a really, really negative story. And that, once I had the ADHD diagnosis, once I understood, okay, this is where my mind is and how it works, cool. A lot of things made sense.
Yep.
But that story. Yeah, sorry.
It is, Rick, I need to run to a commercial, but when we come back, I've got a few things that we had talked about and a few ideas, and I want to talk about. Story's a big deal, but also the story you tell yourself, and give everybody some examples of how you can just make some slight changes in story that can completely change your life. But before we go to break real quick, Rick Green, we talked about the documentaries, but we haven't talked about the website. TotallyADD.com, it's got a plethora of videos, resources, forums, webinars, all kinds of stuff. I encourage you to go check it out. Rick, there's a contact button there. If anybody's got a question, they can just hit contact and send it to you, right?
Yeah, that goes through that. We have a customer service person who's amazing. She's really terrific. She's so patient with people, which I'm not. But, yeah, there you can contact us. You can get involved in the forums. And as you mentioned, there's, I think, about 60 or 70 videos at any one time, free videos.
Yep.
And then some great stuff in the store as well. But, yeah, free videos. It's brilliant. So.
So with that, we'll be right back after these messages.
Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
The average annual cost of attending college starts around $25,000. Students who have ADHD are at high risk of dropping out because they haven't learned the critical skills they need to succeed in school. Protect your investment with an Edge Foundation coach, specifically trained to help students with ADHD and executive function impairment make the transition from high school to college. Visit edgefoundation.org to learn more.
Attendees and exhibitors are invited to participate in CHAD's 2013 Annual International Conference on ADHD that will be held November 7th through the 9th at the Hyatt Regency, Arlington, Virginia. Details about the annual conference are available on our new website at chad.com. Don't miss this chance to become an exhibitor and sponsor at this premier annual event.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is TimeTimer.com.
Experience the difference with a top-notch ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody. We're here with Rick Green. We're talking about the anatomy of a story and the benefits to those with ADHD. And before the break, we were really talking about the power of a story, even so much so that stories sometimes can really trump fact. We really like the emotion side of it. And before the break, I alluded to that it's interesting because if you think in terms of story and you just make some slight adjustments in the story, it's an amazing shift. And, Rick, I want to talk about story that you told that was real powerful, and since then I've actually talked to the gentleman that was involved. It was just amazing. You were on a TV interview with Dr. David Teplin, and you were talking about ADD, and a rogue caller, if I recall the story right, called in and was basically blasting, like, you know, ADD doesn't exist and da-da-da.
Well, I'll do the voice for you. So it's a 24-hour news channel, and so it's evening, and we're on, and Dr. David Teplin's a really amazing guy, well-informed, funny, dry, sharp, and the calls, we're taking one call after another, and we're both answering and so on. And then we get this call, and the voice goes, "Man, I just want to say, I tell you, the ADHD medication, they forced me to, and it fried my brain, man. The drugs are bad. Don't take the drugs. They'll kill you, man. They just ruined my life." Now, I had the same person, and it was like someone doing Cheech and Chong. I'm not even doing that. It was like the worst impression. It was clearly somebody just with an agenda, right? This was, nobody talks like this, except maybe the Big Lebowski. So my dander rose, or whatever the term is. You know, I was like, because he'd done this before in another radio show I'd been on, called in. But of course, changed his name this time. And David Teplin said, "Oh, you're exactly right. That's what everybody thinks. It's so funny that everybody thinks that the medications are," and away he went. It was brilliant. He started with where the person came from. He chuckled and then just went off. And say, that's a very common perception. But in fact, the medication, they've been around for 74 years or whatever it was at the time, and away he went. It was so gracious. And then he led that into an example from his practice of someone.
I just want to highlight, it's at the end of the day, he ended up telling a story. Yes, that's what I used to think. But now he starts to tell the story of the progression of how he shifts. So it's in the coaching world, you meet the person where they is, and I have to kind of throw that in. But the idea is, yes, I can identify you. That's what I I used to think. And then he starts to tell a story about his progression over that process. And from what I understand, both from you and since then, I had talked to Dr. Teplin because we were doing some interviews with him for video. He was like, yeah, that there's a shift in perception and a shift in the story. And from what I understand, it diffused the guy a little bit because he didn't necessarily know what to say. But that's the power of a story that I really want to highlight. And it's so often that as you said before the break, it's about telling, you know, from coming from like was authentic and telling it from your perspective. These are the types of things that really can shift the way people perceive things.
Absolutely. And so what you'll often hear when you ask people what they know about ADHD or you mention ADHD in a conversation, if it comes up, we've all dealt with the I don't believe in ADHD. And that can trigger you into a big rant about the statistics and the 4,000 of this. Well, okay, I'll say it this way. That used to trigger me into a huge rant about the 4,000 studies and all of the rest of it. And off I go with all these facts. And we have, two to four times the rate of divorce, seven times the rate of multiple car accidents, nine times the rate of incarceration, da da da. Away I go. And it was like a fire hose, my brother once told me. He said, you drowned people with this righteous indignation that left them nowhere to go. And then what I do now is I ask a question to get through the story. Yeah, it's all these lazy parents drugging their kids. And my first thing is, really? I don't know any parent that would want their kids on drugs and just kind of casually agrees to, yeah, let's give their kids on drugs. My experience of parents and being a parent is the last thing you want to give your child is any kind of medication. And they, well, yeah. I said, but anyway, who do you know that's done this? And there's silence because they don't know anyone who's done it. They've heard that it's blah, 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 right? They've heard the story. So in some sense, you challenge the story. But there's then this hanging open space, and you got to go, because from what I know, or as you say, my favorite phrase is, you know what? It's exactly what I thought. And then I actually took medication, and I got a year's worth of taxes done in one day. And I was a year and a quarter behind. By the end of the day, I was only one financial quarter behind. And the next day, I went back and wrote red-green skits because I thought, I guess I'm not funny anymore. I'm an accountant. And they were funny. So it was really? I didn't know that. That simple story transforms things. And it's not scientific, which is a pain in some ways. And a lot of the researchers and doctors, I understand, are reluctant to deal with particular instances. And I get that. This is why people get upset Russell Barkley, is because he's dealing with statistics. He's looking at the sheer numbers and the cost and the dark side. And there's no human face to it because he's not dealing with the patients. He's not a clinician. He's not coaching people or having patients come in. He's dealing with large studies. And he's saying, my God, this ruins lives, lots of them, and it's avoidable. On the other hand, you've got the flip side where it is, say, Ned Halliwell or you or any of the people who are dealing with people who have it and us as a website dedicated to educating. We can tell the story, and the power of story is that one story can change everything, that for the better or for the worse. And that's why you want to make sure you're using story wisely and you're using it powerfully, because when you share the story of what happened to you, if you open up and actually talk about your own vulnerability, if you say, if you admit to something, I was always late. In fact, I lost my job or whatever it is, stuff that may not be flattering. Some people are going to go, boy, what an idiot you were. Your first reaction will be to defend. You then go, you know what? That's exactly what I thought. Because back then you probably did think you were an idiot for missing all these things, right? And then you go, and then I found out this is some neurotransmitters, and here I am 2 years later, and I'm on top of everything, or whatever. I'm far more on top of everything. So that's the story.
Can I interject here a second?
Absolutely.
We're talking about the power of the story here, and it's amazing. But there's the story. But let's go also back to those with ADHD. It's also the story that you're telling yourself. I want to touch base on this, Rick, and then I actually want to go to what I perceive as the science of story just for a second. But I can't remember if it was you or Alan Brown in a presentation. You can tell yourself, as I have to finish this project, versus the I need to get started on this project. Even if you're in the middle of it, I need to get started. That language is a change in the story that you're telling yourself. And you go from I have to finish, which is this heavy negative feeling, to I need to get started, which is a little bit more uplifting. And I pause here because I found it fascinating because you were recounting about the evolution, like kind of TV and how the language has changed. And it's not there's a 50% chance of rain today. And help me if I get the wrong. It's rain on the horizon.
Well, and it will be 10% chance of rain. And what they'll say on the news is, there could be severe rain in the forecast, and we'll take a look at a common household product that could kill your pet. That will kill your pet. Now, that story, and there's one, there's one every night. That's the last story. Because every pet owner is going, oh, my God, and they're calling their sister. There's a thing on the news on Channel 5. Apparently there's something in your kitchen that will kill every pet. We better watch. And you sit through all of this other stuff. And then they say, yeah, there could be rain. And they used to say, 10% chance of rain. Now they say there's a possibility of rain, and they don't get specific. They get actually very vague. And at the end, you're sitting there with a story, and in your mind, you've created a story of your pet dying and what it would be like, and you've gone through the emotions of taking your pet to the vet, dying, da-da-da-da-da. And then they tell you, don't leave bleach out. It could kill your pet.
What's interesting to me is in listening to you, because you're in the business of telling stories, as I've listened to this over the period of time, is people are getting much smarter. And it's, to me, telling the story and the way you tell the story and the language that you tell the story is actually becoming very scientific to kind of capture your stuff to the point in time where it overrides fact. And to me, the parallel here is I'm an ADD coach, but I actually tell most people I'm an attention coach because that's actually what I feel like I'm coaching. And so often the issue is to change your perspective or sometimes help you shift the story that you're telling yourself. And everybody, just a preview, I think on the 23rd we're having you and your wife on, Rick, and talking about, I think the title of it is We Plus ADD.
You, me, and we with ADD. Yeah,
great, creating great relationships. Anyway, bottom line is we'll talk about couples and adjusting the stories. But one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the show was to talk about stories are powerful. They're more powerful actually than fact. And the thing about it is, if you have ADHD and you're struggling, a lot of the success that you're going to have in life is changing the story that you're telling yourself.
Absolutely. Here's the thing about that. Can I say one quick thing?
Yeah.
You said earlier, I have to finish this project, and instead it's, I have to start this project. Here's what I would actually say to yourself. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to go to work tomorrow. There'll be consequences, but someone could point a gun at your head and say, go to work. You still don't have to. They may pull the trigger, but there are consequences. You are free to do whatever you want. There will be consequences. Well, I have to go home to my wife. No, you don't. You don't have to do anything. That's the moment you get that, what actually happens is you say, I'm choosing to go home to my wife, and I choose to go home to her every night, and she chooses to be with me every night. She chooses to stay with me every day. That's love. That's love. You get to choose it. Oh, I have to take the kids to school. No, some parents don't. They just push the kids out and find your own way. You take the kids to school because you care. So we go through life saying we have to, we must, I gotta do this. No, you don't. At some point, you don't have to do anything. Basically, you don't have to do anything. You are choosing all of it. I have to get my wife this. I have to take care of that. I have to see the doctor. No, you don't. I have to deal with my ADHD. No, you don't. There'll be consequences. But when you can stop and go, you know what? I'm going to choose to do this report. Then you've got to ask yourself why. Then you step back and go, then you start getting present to what really motivates you. Because on some level, I want to make the money to be able to feed my children because that's the most important thing in the world to me. You could take it and say, because I know it's actually kind of important and this is a big project and it means a lot to some very good people in my office. You can start finding the reasons why you have to do this and you can actually get present to it and allow yourself to create a great story that
I'm doing something. This is so powerful what you're saying. As a coach,
yep.
My ultimate job is to put you in choice, to make you realize. I'm choosing to do – I coached a woman one time who was playing the victim, and we talked around a little bit, and she said, I don't like risk. I actually like being the victim. I'm like – she's looking at me like I had a problem. I'm like, no, this is great. She says, what do you mean? You're supposed to go – no, if you like playing the victim, I don't have a problem. I just want you to make a conscious choice of it, if that makes any sense. And that's
absolutely
a little twisted, but what you just said was when you say, all right, I don't have to do this and I don't have to do that, it's a choice that I'm making. The mere fact that you identify that and you're choosing to it actually, to me, says you're changing the story that you're telling yourself, and it changes the context, which is very powerful in shifting
absolutely.
What you're looking at.
And I took a course once, and they talked about the it was a very interesting course. They talked about the difference between choosing and deciding. Decide ends in CID, as in homicide, suicide, fratricide, infanticide, and so on. Killing off. A decision is killed off. You have to decide, are you going to work or are you not? There's two choices. The choosing,
yep.
I choose to go to work, and there may be no reason for it. Or there may be reasons that are seem so obvious. I choose to take care of my children and feed them. I choose to call my friend even though they're struggling with schizophrenia right now and it kind of scares me a bit and I'm afraid I'll say something wrong, but I'm choosing to call them. Rather than, I better call my friend, I got to call because they're struggling and I'm and. It's a completely different mindset. When you come from that idea of I choose to do this, life becomes very light and you become very powerful because you're choosing to be there. And so when people, you know, you choose, my wife chooses to come home. She isn't home yet. She's out with a friend. But I'm praying that she chooses to come home tonight. And the very, when you start to realize every day that she's choosing to be with me and to be here, that's pretty moving. That's pretty cool. And that, I mean, it moves me. I don't know about you, but it's like, wow. And people like to hear, tell me you love me. It's like, partly with guys, it's just, I'm here. That tells you I love you. And I choose to be here
yep.
day after day.
I need to run to a break real quick. But before we do,
sure.
Every once in a while, my wife will get mad at me or stuff like that. And I just turn to him and say, listen, out of like, you know, the 6 billion men that you had to choose from, you picked me. So,
he
hey,
shows
I'm,
me
I'm the best or the worst, if you want, whatever it is. But anyway, with that, remind everybody, there's lots of stories and a lot of information at totallyadd.com. Go check it out. With that, we'll be right back after these messages.
You're listening to Attention Talk Radio. We'll return in a moment. Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
You can't go off to school with them, but we can. Visit edgefoundation.org to learn more how an EDGE coach can help your student reach their full potential.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is timetimer.com.
Experience the difference with a top-notch ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
Do you have something those with ADHD need? Advertise on Attention Talk Radio. We are a narrowcast, internet-based radio show targeting those with or impacted by ADHD. To learn more about advertising opportunities, email attention@attentiontalkradio.com.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody. We're having a great conversation with Rick Green on the anatomy of story and how it relates to ADHD, and I think it's very, very powerful. And, you know, Rick, I've seen a couple different presentations, and I got my own little things that I'm throwing in here, but before we go, I just want to throw out some stuff that I've learned. One, the power of a story, it lessens fears. Stories are hardwired in us. stories impact how we attend to things, or they impact how we pay attention to stuff. Stories don't have to be facts. Specific facts are less important.
Yeah, I think that's so true. That I'll just stop you there for one quick thing. So people may be confused about, so should I go around lying? It's based on truth, and it's based on what happened. You're not making up a story of what happened to you, but a series of numbers and statistics does not emotionally engage anyone. The story of one child's triumph or one child's suffering moves people to action. You know that they used to have ads when I was a kid, the millions of people are starving here. Instead, they started running an ad of one child. This is so-and-so. Would you become the sponsor? And that cuts, people had to change channels because it cut right through them. That suddenly there was this story of one person. It's not numbers. And so I think that, you know, what I've been saying is that there is kind of a truth to a story that's bigger. That a great story, like, I don't know, let's say Hamlet, is a story about people, about resolve and fear and indecision. It's a terrific story. It's based on, you know, a myth, and it's not, there wasn't really necessarily a Prince Hamlet, but the audience is engaged because we've all felt that fear of indecision. Should I, shouldn't I? Do I trust myself to take this action? What if it goes wrong? Blah, 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 blah. All of the familiar things. So there's truth in the story, and that it's the emotional connection with people. And, you know, that's why we will pay for stories. That's why even a book about World War II, the best books, carry stories. Band of Brothers, you know, there were many books, sweeping books, epic books about the whole battle. He focused on a bunch of guys and their stories.
I love what you said, which actually was leading to one of the next things that I was going to talk, is note that we don't see ourselves as statistics.
No.
I've also heard you say is we think we are logical. In fact, we're not. We're actually emotional beings.
We are so emotional. It is astounding that this is why Fox News and all of this stuff works on people. And we're so overwhelmed. They're coming at us so fast with stuff. It's impossible to process it. They're also using a whole series of really rather insidious techniques in the media to get to suggest stuff that isn't necessarily true. Is Jeff Copper actually doing this radio show just to make money and get rich? Is Jeff Copper actually? I could start saying all kinds of stuff. Never answer the question. I could never say no. Of course not. I've met Jeff Copper. He's an amazing guy, and he's found a terrific way to reach people. But by laying down all those things, psychologically, people now have that in their head. Is Obama this, or is so-and-so this, or whatever it is, it's planted there. And we are incredibly emotional. Study after study after study has shown that, and some really interesting experiments have been done to show people are completely skewed by a mood and emotion. If they're played light, happy music or told a funny story before an IQ test, they'll do higher. If a teacher is told that one group of kids are gifted by Christmas at the end of the first semester, this class will be scoring well above average. The exact same group or the next class over, both classes, by the way, are just average kids. The teacher's told these are slow kids. That's the story. By Christmas, those kids will be struggling. Because in the gifted class or the class that the teacher's been told they're gifted, the teacher says something and a kid at the back, you know, what's one of the things that we learned about the Renaissance? And the kid at the back yells, happiness. Now, gifted, the teacher goes, oh, this child's very bright. What do you mean by that? Say more about that. And then in the class that supposedly is not too bright, what do we know about the Renaissance? Happiness. Okay, these kids must not even know what the word Renaissance is. So that, like, and so the teacher's going to leave. What do you mean, happiness? Was it the happiness? And so on and so on. And the kid may have just, you know, yelled out happiness for no reason, whatever. But you'll find what you're looking for. You'll hear what you want. And it's why, I mean, psychologically, we decide whether we like a politician within 10 to 15 seconds. That's it. And it's very hard to change our opinion of anyone, public figure, even someone we meet at a party. Within 10 to 15 seconds, we know that we like the person or we don't like them. And that I think that's why, for example, Sarah Palin was so popular. She came walking out there. She looked sharp. She looked intelligent. She was bright. You just went, wow, this is a fight. This isn't Hillary Clinton with her dour frown and pulled back hair. This is a...
Yep.
And then, you know, what newspapers do you read? None. Oh, well, you know, or whatever. I'm not attacking her at all, but I'm getting to that idea that we very quickly judge things, these days especially, and everything's based on appearances. So, you know, you watch any show, and there, any of the reality shows, they could have the best singing voice in the world, and Simon Cowell will say, sorry, but you don't look like a singer. You won't have a career. And he's right. You don't look like a singer. You're overweight or you're whatever it is. You're too tall. You're too gooky looking. Whatever it is, you're not going to have a career as a singer. Sorry.
The thing that's interesting to me here is we're talking about the anatomy of a story. At the same time, I want to emphasize the benefits to those with ADHD, and I'm going to kind of go this backwards. One is the story you're telling yourself is like, I need to get started as opposed to finishing among some other things. There's also the emotion and stuff, but I want to pause here for a second, and unfortunately I'm going to go to the dark side. And a second ago you talked about the news and the techniques that they use, and it was interesting, back in the early 80s, I used to be in a job where I used to listen to radio a lot, and I remember listening to Rush Limbaugh say, somebody was arguing with him, he was a politician, he said, no, I'm in the entertainment business, I'm not in politics at all, and that stuck with me for the longest time, because I would listen to him, and even he will acknowledge the job of a caller is to make me look good in terms of, and to me I read that as entertainment. And so fast forward is that when I look at the print news, at the end of the day it's about selling newspapers or eyes and touches and stuff like that, and I can't help but relate some of this back to, there's a certain writer in the New York Times that has been printing some articles, one last February that sensationalized the death of one particular individual, and they focused on the emotion of that particular thing, and it was tragic because it cast a very negative shadow over ADD and stimulants. And the unfortunate part to me was, while this situation was tragic, and I won't get into the details and the speculation, is many people emotionally made a judgment on stimulants, and there was several rebuttals and blogs around that actually was creating an issue, because there's many people who could benefit from stimulants and they'll never go because of the emotional strife of reading this particular article, because the article is very, very emotional. And going back to our point is, there was some facts here, but it focused on the individual, but cast a big shadow over the masses. And I just want to kind of point that out, because you have to be smart enough to pause and realize that the power of the story is there, but you've got to know when to realize, particularly in mass media today, that they, as I think as you put it, they control the agenda, and realize that it's really more about entertainment. They are there to try to provide news, but entertainment's probably more important to the news, and that determines what their agenda is. So, Rick, you want to speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. I mean, the reason we got to make the documentary ADD and Loving It was because we were going to tell the story of a comedian, Patrick McKenna, getting diagnosed with ADHD. If it had just been a presentation about the costs and the statistics and so on, and we couldn't have sold it, but it was Patrick was going to tell his story, and we were going to follow along and hear what he's been through and what he's going through and so on out the other end. And you're right. I remember that article in the New York Times, and the Times has done it again and again and again, from what I understand from everybody who's in the who's trying to make a difference with ADHD, is that they keep putting these articles out. And yes, one child did die, or whatever, the young man died from stimulant medication. And yet there was one caveat after another. On the other hand, he did do this. He was not just doing this. He was doing all kinds of illegal things to get the drugs and so on. And you know how easy it is to buy marijuana or get pills of any kind, ecstasy and stuff? I mean, there's so much drugs around. The idea that ADHD medications are a big, big, I mean, I get they're being abused too, but they are safe, you know, as two or three doctors have told us in interviews, they're safer than aspirin. Aspirin kills a lot of people.
If taken correctly. Yep.
Yes, thank you. If taken correctly, it's safer than aspirin. Aspirin causes stomach bleeds and kills people and on and on and on. and hundreds of millions of doses of this medication. And meanwhile, like, why isn't the New York Times talking about all the people dying of OxyContin and all of the other stuff that's out there that is incredibly destructive? And then, you know, people are left with the fear. They make the connection in themselves, and they end up with, well, I don't want my child to get addicted to something. Listen, if ADHD medication was addictive, why would we keep forgetting to take it? Right? It's like, you know someone who's addicted to the two main stimulants that everybody uses, nicotine and caffeine. Do you know anyone who smokes heavily who at 4 in the afternoon would go, geez, I don't think I had any cigarettes today? That's funny.
Yep.
Or some, you know, nobody. Within the moment they wake up, they're craving it. The same with the with caffeine. Nobody who's a regular coffee drinker, and for me it was cola drinks. I'd had six a day to get my stimulant before I realized what was going on. But, you know, it's not like at 7 at night I went, yeah, I don't think I've had a can of cola today. It was like, no, by 11 in the morning I wanted my first can of cola to keep me going. And so the facts, there's the facts, but to just lay the facts out and say these medications are non-addictive, that carries nothing for people. Yes, says who? Whereas when you can tell it into a story and say, look, my wife has to remind me, or at 3 in the afternoon if I'm kind of jumping around too much and too many talking too fast as I am this evening. But if I'm like that, she'll say, did you remember to take your pill this morning? And I'll have to think, did I? Whereas, you know, the other stuff, definitely addictive. And people get that. They go, ah, of course, because everybody's tried caffeine or tea or whatever, so they know.
Yep. So just I want to kind of start bringing this together at culmination. Rick, I'm so appreciative that you came on the show tonight, and we've been talking so much about the power of a story, and I think the key takeaway for me is when I pay attention to the anatomy of a story, you can use it to your advantage, or you can be passive and be submissive and be controlled by the story. So we were just telling the dark side of how the media uses the power of the story to influence your mindset. And we talked earlier about, you know, the language that they use and the stories that they tell with regard to the weather. But at the same time, what I think is really important is for those with ADD is to realize is that there's the other side of story and the story that you tell yourself. And if you grasp that and begin to manage that, you can change your life. Because at the end of the day, what I've learned is your experience in life is based off of what you pay attention to, because attention is a choice. And science is telling us more and more is that you change what you're paying attention to, and your physical brain changes. And so much of life is managing the story that you're telling yourself in your life. And we've talked today that it is emotional. There's so much that we've covered, and so that the power is to manage that. And again, later, in a month from now, we're going to have you and your wife on talking about relationships and stories, and it's very powerful. But to me, again, there is a science to the story, and you can grab it, understand it, and use it to your advantage. Or
absolutely,
you can become submissive and let it control your life. And all too often when I'm working with people is everybody else is controlling the story that you're telling yourself. So with that, you want some comments on what I just said?
Yeah, it's really great stuff because, you know, and you're dealing with it frontline in coaching people. And people, you create a story. Something happens, you create a story about it. So a cop is shot, rushed to the hospital, and pulls through. You can create the story of that the world's going to hell, that people, there's too many this, there's too much that, this is what's wrong with society, young people. You can create, or you can go, my God, all those other cops, even though they knew there was a gun, somebody with a gun, they came. The first responders came. They got them to the hospital. The doctor saved them through this incredible technique. They're all trained. All of these people, you know, one person with a gun for whatever reason, and here's 80 to 100 people working together to save this guy. Like, that's the world. And so if you go out in the morning and you see your car scratched, big scratch, the story what are you going to create? People are idiots. They're the punks. There's this. It's that. It's this. It's that. You, away you go, right? And in my day, we didn't, you know, people stood around if they wrecked something. They didn't do blah, blah, blah. These are young people on drugs, blah, 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 blah. You could, but if you go out for 40 years to get into your car and there's no scratch, you don't walk out every morning and go, look at that. There's a million people in the city and my car is not scratched. Wow. In 40 years, nobody's ever scratched my car. Okay, it happened once. We are wired to focus on the negative. The potential with a story is to turn it around. Start with the negative. Here's what my life was like when you're telling people. Here's what it was before that. And then here's where it is now. Now that I know what ADHD is, here's the difference it made. The simple one I tell people is that when I figured out what was going on, I took all of my screenplay ideas and screenplays that I'd started, and there were lots of them, and I put them into a file called I'll Never Do This, because I'm a skit comedy writer, and I could never, I always said, you know, I love movies, I should be writing these comedy films, I should be the next Frank Capra or whatever, right? And now I realize with ADHD, yeah, I'm not going to sit for 6 months trying to write a screenplay on the chance, one in 500 chance that it actually gets turned into a movie, because there's a lot of screenplays written, mm-hmm. and that the one in 50 chance that my film doesn't open opposite Star Wars, The Phantom Scary Thing, episode 12, and nobody ever sees my film because everyone's going to see that one. So that was just never going to happen. And before that moment, I had that I'm not a real writer, that I'm too lazy to master the structure of a screenplay because it requires structure, blah, blah. I had all kinds of stuff. And then it was, you know what? I'm a really good skit comedy writer, and I've written a lot. I've written 700 episodes of radio and television or co-written with others. That's a lot. So I should be proud of that instead of focused on what I'm not doing.
That's
a complete different story, right? That's the different story. And we miss those stories. We don't even see them, or we don't see the good news. And I think also there's a great quote, Kate Kelly, the late, great Kate Kelly, said that when she finally got diagnosed with it, she said, I was feeling very bad about it. And the doctor said, you have to have a lot of gray matter to have gotten through life and gotten where you are with this going on. And she said, I cried because I realized, yeah, I've been working so hard. And so when people say, I guess I'm lazy, it's like, yeah, let's try the exact opposite story. You have an issue that makes everything harder to do, whether it's holding down a job or finishing a conversation with someone you love or getting out the front door in the morning, and you're managing up to a point. And now you've got this information, and wow, what are you going to do with that? What can you change? And that's when you could say, now what I do is this, now what I do is that. So the story that you tell yourself is crucial. When I, you know, for me to be knowing that there was this entire television crew, cast and crew, going to be waiting, and I couldn't find my car keys, I worked myself into such a lather. And you're talking about the brain. What's interesting is research is showing now that when you're in stress or upset like that, you lose your peripheral vision. So you're actually far less likely to find your phone when you're upset. You'll walk right by it. If you stop and go, oh, I lost my phone again, but then, you know what? I'm the writer, director, producer, and actor in a show. No wonder I've got so much on the go. And,
yep.
And then it was, okay, make a game out of finding the phone. Where is it?
Yep.
And here it is.
So, anyway. So much about story. And you've inspired me right now, and forgive me, Rick, because I have to go in this direction right now. We are on the eve. ADHD Awareness Day started a couple years ago. Michelle Novotny, with a small band of Indians, wrote a Senate resolution to start it in the United States. It was expanded to a week, and now ADHD Awareness Month is right around the corner. It begins in October.
Yep.
And one of the things about it is next week we are interviewing Michelle, and we're going to talk about the ADHD Coalition and ADHD Awareness Month and where to find information. But most of the people that will be listening to the show, is basically it's a call to action, and that is to get the information and go out and tell the story of ADHD. And I can't help but refer back to an interview that I did with Stephen Henshaw. I think it was in March or April, and we talked about stigma. It was fascinating. We broke down stigma a gazillion different ways, but one of the things that I took from it is if we're going to overcome stigma, we need to humanize the challenges that we have and tell the stories.
Yep.
And that's so powerful. And then about a month or two later, I had Dr. Barkley on the show because I wanted to talk to him about the gift-curse debate. There's so many people who want to call ADHD a gift and a curse, and as he says, you can't call it a gift and ask for accommodations. And I know that people that want to tell the story that it's a gift because it's kind of a great story, but he's saying, how can you do this? And I think he's been stigmatized, if you will, as Dr. Evil in the debate. And where we were going with it is there's so many people with ADD, as he says, it's no gift. You're not going to wrap it up and give it to somebody Christmas. But, and I even told some of my personal stories, the challenge of dealing with an issue, in my case, dyslexia and learning disability, in other people's cases, is disability, many people rise to meet those challenges and do some absolutely incredible things. And those stories, the David Needlemans, and I always pronounce his name, Paul Oppenheimer, the guy who started Kinko's, and the
yep.
list goes, Ty Pennington, and Javi Mandel, and the story goes on. Those are the stories that inspire people, and the more we can tell those stories, the more we humanize it, and the more we can reduce the stigma and really pull this thing around. And so in totality, we are on the eve of, at least for my show, the next 5 episodes are going to be dedicated to awareness, and the whole month is on ADHD.
Absolutely.
And I encourage everybody to go out there and tell the story to inspire people, because it kind of creates some change. And so with that, I need to wrap this up a little bit, Rick, but final comments?
Well, you know, when you tell a story, make it funny. If it's embarrassing, that's okay. If you tell something that you've done embarrassing, people actually are warm right up to you. Someone says, that was stupid. You go, oh, you think that's stupid? You should hear what happened when I did with my car keys. And it is shocking, but people will actually, most people, when they hear you talking about yourself, they're just drawn right into it, the vulnerability. We love that about human beings, when someone is vulnerable. I recommend the Brené Brown TED Talks on vulnerability. It's key. You're falling in love, that's vulnerable. You have to be vulnerable. You're having a child, you have to be vulnerable. You're coming on to a radio show with Jeff Copper, you're really vulnerable, because he can turn on you and just tear you.
There's time, just like that. But, you know, I want to reiterate what you said, because, Rick, you were on last November, and we talked about the impact of humor on ADHD, and one of the things that was kind of cool about that is, why, you know, you have those stories, we're going to laugh at this later, and yours is, well, why wait till later? Let's laugh now. And that's literally a story, and if you can just like lighten that stuff up with it, really can change your mindset, your attitude, how you look at life, the way you still, and literally it can transform your world. So
absolutely, no, people don't remember numbers, but they remember the story, and they may not tell it exactly right, but they, you know, they, the statistics and the numbers, but story, human story, we remember the story. And we remember what's important to us. And that's the way to change minds, and it's the way to transform how you view yourself, your life, your ADHD.
It's very, very powerful. So with that, everybody go to totallyadd.com. Check out all the resources. In particular, check out the interview, the webinar that we did on the impact of ADHD in sports and exercise. And also, everybody, be watching Attention Talk Video. We've got a couple, we're going to be releasing a few videos with Rick late October, or actually November mostly, on there's some really good stuff, like about how to argue with ADHD, like with genes and other stuff. And catch our archives. We've done a couple shows with him, The Impact of ADHD and Humor, and the making of the documentary, which is pretty cool because he and Pat McKenna came on years ago. And it was funny because most people don't realize that if you watch Totally ADD and Love It, Pat was actually getting diagnosed. When they're videotaping him and his wife going through the checklist, that was actually him. That wasn't acted. That's the first time they did that. Right, Rick?
Yeah, so they didn't know. I gave them the winter Utah and all these tests. I actually never got permission to do this either. Realized later I didn't know anything about the legalities. But they did the tests and read the questions on camera, and they went for an hour straight. It was so funny. It was hard for the crew because we were trying not to laugh, right, as they went at it.
Yep.
And it was great. But then the flip side of it was when we were making the documentary, he did some stuff in the classroom. We didn't use much of it. But at one point I said, just go up there, talk right, because the kids had gone to recess. I said, this was the class or school that he'd gone to as a kid. I said, just just tell us the dark side, the pain of being a kid who had dyslexia and ADHD, and nobody knew what was going on and what it was like for you. And Patrick has won awards for not just his comedy, but for his dramatic acting. And he took a breath and he nodded and he looked down and thought, and then we just started rolling. And he went for 10 minutes. And you could have heard a pin drop amongst the crew. These were people who worked with Patrick for years, some of them on the Red Green Show. It was so moving as he talked about it, about his childhood, sitting there and the teacher saying, "You got it wrong. Did everyone hear that? Patrick failed. Patrick." And he just, it was so dark we couldn't use it. But, man, it was powerful. And that is the power of story, real story.
And the cool part about that show is I loved it, is actually that documentary was made. It wasn't like reflecting on a story. It was live while it was happening.
Yeah, exactly. It was very cool. Very cool.
All right. So, hey, Rick, again, thank you for coming on the show. Again, everybody, go to totallyadd.com. Check out all their resources. And, Rick, we'll catch you in a month with Ava for another great show.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you, Jeff. Take care to everybody, and thanks for tuning in. Now let's dance.